Hello, this is Janet Gowan welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest has a great deal to say, as does everybody really. Her name is Dawn Middleman, and she is in the business of decluttering life. Her business is called Lighten Up Organizing, and she says so wisely, don't let that stuff hold you down. So Dawn, I'm going to go to you and talk about just for a minute where you're from and what your upbringing was like and how you came to doing this for a living.
Well, I'm from Dallas, Texas. My family moved around a good deal, and I think maybe in all of those moves,
packing and unpacking.
And my mother was extremely well organized, so I think I kind of caught some of that from her.
So she was well organized by nature and then had to be if you're moving, and she knew what to keep and what to let go each time?
Exactly.
Was that hard for you?
No, I think I kind of fell into it too.
You're good at letting things. Okay. So go ahead. Talk about more about you.
Well, and then over the last number of years, I worked for a consulting firm for fire departments all over the country, and I was really reorganizing fire departments.
I thought you were going to say something else. I thought you were going to say consulting because too much clutter is a fire hazard.
Well, yes, it is. But no, this was organizing fire departments, and it was coming in doing a full reorganization of the board of the bringing fire departments together, their policies, their procedures.
Oh, so that wasn't organizing them physically.
No.
So
anyway, out of that, then my husband was ill for quite a while, and I needed some work that I could do that was, a little bit more flexible. Mm-hmm. And so this is when I started doing the organizing people's homes and
offices.
How did
you begin? I think people are sometimes curious. I know I am. Like, how do you go from knowing how to do something to translating into hire me?
Well, actually, what happened is I had different friends, and they were always so amazed with my organizing skills. They had friends that weren't organized, and they would say, call Dawn.
Oh,
get Dawn in there. So that really is what
So it translated easily?
Yes, it translated very easily. And then really so much of what I do is word of mouth. Mm-hmm. I love it because I go in there and my clients are just overwhelmed.
Oh, yes.
It's gotten to the point that, well, for one thing, sometimes people are embarrassed. Other times they're just, it's really weighing them down.
They're embarrassed,
literally.
But they know they need to call you.
Yes. And when I'm done, I had one lady that she said, I'm skip happy. She was so thrilled.
Oh, you mean happy enough to skip?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Right.
What is the line that people draw between, I can live in this mess and I need help?
It depends on the person.
What would you say are some examples?
Right? Well, because I have some people that, I have a hoarder, and for them, there are rooms that you literally cannot walk into. Mm-hmm. So for them, I guess you'd say there isn't a line, you know.
But they get to you at some point.
Yes.
Relative calls?
Actually, mine have not been relative calls. They've called, and oftentimes it's a spouse that can't handle it anymore or something along that line.
A man I knew has a mother who was so much of a hoarder that she actually had fallen in one of the rooms, and they didn't find her for 2 days.
Oh, my God!
I mean, it's horrible.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Well, and I can tell you from the fire department standpoint, they come in, in an emergency situation, whether it is a fire or whether it's someone has a heart attack or whatever. And I mean, literally, they talk about places where they can barely get through. So
do they have any authority to do something?
Not really.
I mean, if they go in, when I was a girl, we used to have the fire department used to come around to the schools and have us inspect our houses, and we get like prizes for the most fire hazards that you find. And those were largely a matter of too much stuff collected in garages that would burst spontaneously into...
Right. Uh-huh. Well, actually, they can, but it's more of a voluntary thing. People would, people would say, I want to have, my fire inspection. But one thing that I really try to remind people about is that keeping things in cardboard boxes, say in an attic or any way, place where there's a furnace or that sort of thing, firefighters will always tell you that's an extreme hazard because the cardboard turns to a creosote and it's very combustible. Uh-huh. So I try to encourage people to store things in plastic boxes.
So what do you do when you go in?
Well,
and then talk about some of the, without mentioning names, of course, but some of the challenges you faced for people.
Well, You know, I would say it's generally the challenges that I have right now are people downsizing, mm-hmm. and often downsizing includes a major life change. So,
because people can no longer walk upstairs and
that's right, uh-huh. that's right. And they're having to move into a different place where they can have, you know, where it's easier for them to live, or maybe they've had a death in the fam, you know, a spouse has died, you know, there's a lot of traumatic things like
sure.
that can go with
sure.
it, or even a divorce or whatever. So those are generally when I come in. So these are very personal items that I'm dealing with. And so what I do when I come in is the first thing I do is I compliment them on what's working.
Oh, good. Yes, that's always good in life.
It's yes, and that really helps, because I think most of all people feel really badly about the way it is, and they're kind of hard on themselves. And I would have to say, kind of along your theme of your love letters, is love yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, love yourself. Be easy on yourself.
Why do people hold on to things that are not necessary? People hold on to things like envelopes that say resident.
Yes.
What is the fear of throwing things away?
Well,
that are clearly not meant to be in your life, it seems.
Well, and I would clarify the difference between a hoarder, because that's a, you know, a psychological thing, and just the average person.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it's just they haven't had time to
mm-hmm.
deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
I had one client whose husband passed away, and the office that he was in, it became a living space for someone else, and so all of his things
oh.
got shoved to her room, and
mm-hmm.
emotionally she couldn't handle it. So for me to come in helped move things along. So it really was more of an emotional thing there.
It must be. People can't think they're going to need certain things later. When I went through the house that my parents lived in when my mother died a couple of years ago, and she was very organized. Both my parents were so organized and so elegantly they lived. And yet, there were closets filled with boxes of stationery from a medical practice that was defunct.
Yes.
It's not like anyone was going to use it. Why do people
hang on to uh-huh. those kind of things? Well, I know. Part of it, I find it's an age thing. So if they were from the Depression era, then there's a feeling of lack there and a concern of holding on to things. I think that's
Or do people hold on to things that define themselves?
Well, they do. Yes. Yes. And I work with people on that one a lot too. And that is, you know, I work with them on how the item makes them feel.
Uh-huh.
It's not as much this thing of like, if you haven't used it in a year,
uh-huh.
I don't really agree with that. You know, I mean, take clothes, for example. I mean, I have one client, she dresses beautifully, St. John, Chanel, that kind of thing. Well, her things are classics.
Mm-hmm.
That if she hasn't worn it in a year, there's no reason to throw it
right,
out.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, but what I really work with people on is like, how does this item make you feel? Okay, like, let's say it's a picture from Hawaii, a vacation
mm-hmm.
in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, a person could smile and it gives them that. They feel the breeze,
mm-hmm.
they feel the beach, you know. It feels delightful.
So that's a keep.
That's a keep. Or it could be, oh, yes, that's when my husband and I had a huge argument, and after that it led to a divorce, and well, don't keep that one.
Okay.
So,
uh-huh.
yeah, it's how it makes you feel.
And what about, how do you go about, so that's how you go about determining what to get rid of. But if a person's going from a house, and I'm guessing it's more often women alone who have had to make this kind of a shift
right.
because they've been alone for a while.
Right.
And what determines what you keep when you go, say, from 8 rooms to 3 rooms?
Right, right.
What do you, that's so hard.
Okay, so now this is the hard part, and this is where I like to give people a hint, and that is kind of go in with a goal and a game plan. Like, you know, like, what are the things that I use most often? What things give me the most pleasure?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to really prioritize in that manner and keep that as the big picture. And then, because so many times people get caught in tiny details, you know, they
mm-hmm.
get caught up, say they have 3 hours set aside for this and they made it through one drawer.
Uh-huh.
Because they're in there looking at, oh, well, now this postage stamp might
Oh, agonizing over
the details.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And I try to help people keep a a big picture. And just first really start off, I mean, this is what I did with fire departments, start off with goals and priorities, mm-hmm. and then from there, with a big picture like that, then it's much more helpful.
So do you make like a checklist so people can feel satisfied when they've gotten somewhere and then they can feel victorious?
Yes, exactly.
I would think that would be helpful.
Exactly.
What about the reality? I don't know if you ever use this or this is part of that, when people can be convinced that what they're not going to use, what they give away, will be enjoyed by somebody else. Is it helpful?
Oh, that's extremely helpful. Uh-huh. And oftentimes they kind of try to think of, well, what my daughter's generation, the 30-year-olds, do is they have a party and clothes or whatever it is.
Oh.
They have a party. They bring things, and then everybody swaps back and forth and that kind of thing.
But that doesn't get the number of your possessions down.
But right. I have also heard of people that, you know, they're moving into a smaller place. They invite their friends over, and instead of like a garage sale, it's everybody
a giveaway. Nice. Yes,
which is great fun.
Yes, I
have to say, garage sales are usually, they're not that cost effective. I mean,
uh-huh.
it's a lot of time and work.
Yes.
So, the giveaway idea with friends.
Because I was hanging on to a table in my home, and, you know, I was hanging on to it because I loved it, and it was just filled with memories. And my daughter came in, she said, "Why don't you get rid of that thing?" And I said, "Oh, I just can't. It's got so many memories." And as I said it, I realized this is something I haven't used for a long time. And let somebody else take it and start to build memories around it.
Oh, how nice.
And it made it so easy.
Right.
The memories aren't going to go just because you get rid of it. You still have the memories.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's take photographs of things that people have let go and like put them in an album for them?
Yes, I do.
Oh,
I do.
And that's
a really good idea because then the item is, you know,
still in
the
there.
Memory.
Yes.
As you say, the memory is preserved. And photos are a big one to talk about because that's huge. I mean, you know, we kind of went from an era, you know, when photos first came out and it was just kind of like you had the one wedding picture or something years ago. You know what I mean?
People, or a few, yes.
Or, you know, or one, you know, family reunion or something like that. And then it became so easy to take pictures. And now people have boxes and boxes mm-hmm. of pictures. And if one's been careful and put them in albums and stuff, those get really heavy.
Right.
So the best way with those is transfer them to digital. There are companies where you can send off like 300 pictures and they just scan them all mm-hmm. and then send you back the digitals and then you pick out which ones you want. And then I suggest to people they have a book made.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nothing's, you know,
and
something
pick, and could, pick judiciously because
yes.
when you have these beautiful little children and people go photography nuts and they take, you know, so many pictures and they kind of all look the same. That beautiful child is going to look kind of the same in every picture.
Right.
So if you choose a few.
Yes, that's best. And also out of focus pictures never get in focus.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
Or if it's somebody and you don't even recognize who it is anymore,
it's okay
to get rid of those.
Okay. You know, so you give permission.
Yes.
That's important.
Yes.
I had that issue with photographs. And even writing down, I happen to have a very good memory. And so even writing down on the back who they are, well, when my memory goes, I'm not going to know what that refers to.
That's right.
If I don't recognize them.
Right.
Or people take photographs of their dinner party tables.
Yes.
How many pictures of the buffet table do you have in that box?
Yeah, right.
Food that you wouldn't eat anymore.
Right, right.
Uh-huh.
Or with these days, with everything so available online, I mean, you know, how many pictures of the Eiffel Tower?
Oh, none.
If there isn't someone you know underneath it.
Oh, good for you.
Yes.
I so agree with that.
Yes.
And people say sometimes when you're on a trip, well, you know, are you taking pictures? Send us pictures. And I say, go Google it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's right.
Those days are gone.
Right.
Okay. Now, what about the really emotional things that you find? Like, I mean, it would be normal for me to ask about love letters because I know that in the attics and in the drawers are packets of them.
Yes. I had a
people
precious...
People hung on to those, don't
not,
they?
Not to say a name here, of course, but this is a very well-known woman, and mm-hmm. her husband had passed away, and in going through the things, she came across several love letters from him, including...
That she hadn't seen in a while herself.
Yes, that she had not seen for a while in herself, and she told me, she said, oh, Dawn, if you weren't here helping me, I would just be crying, you know, I couldn't get through this, you know. And so what I really told her to do, and it was really cute because the tablet was there, and you could see through the drafts that he had done in writing this letter, which was really sweet. And I told her, scan those, mm-hmm. take a picture of them, get them in digital form. And that's how she saved those.
But does she still have them physically?
I believe she finished it up after I was done. I believe she saved them physically.
I bet.
And she, you know, and I would encourage that.
I would too, because that handwriting.
Yes.
I've noticed that when I do workshops or presentations, I mean, I've noticed this, so I use it now. When I give somebody an old photograph, I wish I thought of that. I would have done it with you, and then we could describe it. Are you aware of the first thing you do when somebody gives you an old photograph personally? People turn it over. Almost always. They're looking for handwriting. They're looking for the heartbeat.
Wow. That makes... Well, and in this particular situation, this was a businessman, and it was even on that legal ad that he, you know, was using in a meeting, and you could tell he was, you
yes.
know... So there was a lot of sweetness to
and
that.
And that's another issue with love letters... is using the appropriate stationery, which is either something that reflects the other person or something that reflects you.
Right.
So when you see
right.
children's letters on notebook paper or this man's letters on a legal pad.
Right, right.
That's
and presumably, I think he even probably copied this onto a card to her or something like that. But it was almost the fun of it was to see the time and effort he put into it.
And that's a huge part of a
yes.
love letter. A good love letter is planning and passion.
Right. Right.
Oh, that's so interesting. And about having things scanned digitally. I mean, I'm kind of going off on a tangent here about letters, but they last longer. We still have things signed by Marie Antoinette. I have letters in my collection of what I show to people, letters that are maybe 120 years old, and they are as clear and fresh as the day they were written if people use good paper.
Right.
And good ink.
Right.
But you can't play your Betamax movies.
No, no.
And you can't use those old floppies. So if
no.
you get something done digitally, you have to maintain that
exactly.
whenever the technology changes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the examples about the movies is absolutely perfect because we've all kind of gone through those
right.
phases of technology.
But the letters.
Yes.
Those stay.
Right.
What's the attitude of children of parents who are downsizing in terms of what they want?
Well, you know,
I think we want our children to take things that mean something to us, but they may not mean anything.
Well, an acute one that I'll tell you is so a particular young man, I was helping him and he said his mother showed up with the baby book and all of that. He's going, I don't want this. I don't care when I first walked. And, you know, for moms, there was an era there where they weren't a good mother if they didn't keep
that's
up the
right.
baby.
My baby's first 7 years.
That's right. My baby's first 7
but,
years.
But his children might want it, or his grandchildren. I mean, that'll be gold when somebody else finds it, maybe.
That's right. That's right. Well, and then also, you know, you often hear, I mean, I often have clients that, you know, they've got the fine china. They never use
that's
it,
right.
but they're going to pass it on down, or the silver or whatever. And
right.
I say, use it. I mean, you know, if you like it, use it. Don't expect that, because
right.
tastes change.
Well, I think the know? Attitude also towards the sterling silver cutlery that people used to choose, you know, when they would register for. And I think the attitude now is, and we have to polish it? No, thank you.
Right, right.
So what are the most huge challenges that you've had in this?
Cardboard boxes and sacks.
I mean, with sacks?
Sacks.
What does that mean?
Seriously, you have no idea how much room people take up in their homes with cardboard boxes that they're saving for the day that they're going to mail something.
Oh,
or
I thought you meant stuffed with things.
No, I mean cardboard boxes and paper sacks and, you know, all of this kind of thing. So my thing is definitely collapse them, fold them down, mm-hmm. don't leave mm-hmm. them, you know, because all these people have all these Amazon boxes now.
Oh, sure. You know, need a house bigger than your home to store the
right.
boxes.
And then the other thing is people want to be ecological, you know, that sort of thing. So they don't want to just, you know, toss things out. Anyway, so definitely collapse them, fold them down, have them in a specific place that you're keeping them. With regard to grocery sacks or, you know, iMagnon bags or whatever it is.
Well, those you can probably sell on eBay.
Probably. Yeah. Anyway, take those and it's like have them in a container, mm-hmm. okay, basket, doesn't matter what it is. But when that gets full, don't save any more.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's the trick on that one is, you know, you have a specific space for them and then stop.
Yeah. And it's tempting to keep things. You know, I keep beautiful ribbons. Those French ribbons, I just love them. And I've got a closet full of them. It's ridiculous.
Right. Yeah. Right. But if they bring you joy, you know, but then find uses.
Well,
you know,
I do.
I encourage people to do.
I use them. I wrap gifts and then I will give gifts, you know, to my children. And then they take the ribbon off and give it back to me. So I don't actually get anything moving. It's like...
Well, there are places in the city, and excuse me, the name escapes me right now, but there is a place in the city that is specifically for artists and stuff, and you donate their things there that they will then, you know, that they will use for their different art projects and stuff. And there again, it's that feeling of if you're passing something on, even if it's, you know, like most people had thought, well, I'll pass this on to the kids, but mm-hmm. if that doesn't work, I mean... I think for everybody, if they can pass something on and know somebody's going to get
a
great use
yes.
out of it. And you don't have to know the person. You don't have to meet
right.
them.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I love the one where a person donates a nice, you know, outfit and it goes
for
to
people
women,
who are going to job,
to
interview.
Job
yes.
interviews and
yes.
things like that. I mean, there's so many of
those. So you must encourage that.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes, definitely. Because those are, you know, those are just
And there is
wonderful.
The perception. I wonder if you run into this among women that... Well, this will come back into style.
Mm. Yes, there is.
And it never does.
It doesn't, unless it's a classic.
Then it never goes out.
Then it never goes out. Absolutely.
Right. But for the A-line skirt that you think is going to come back, when it comes back, the cut's going to be a tiny different.
That's exactly
it's going to be
right.
an inch and a half longer so that you can't...
Yes.
It doesn't...
Obviously a trick of the fashion industry.
Yeah.
But I agree 100%. You think it's going to come back, but if it comes back, it doesn't... come back that
right.
that way. And I read a thing recently that, you know, when it comes to vintage clothing, leave that to the young girls.
Yes.
Because I think for any mature woman, vintage stuff just makes them look vintage.
Yes. Goofy.
Yes.
That is a whole interesting world of clutter control.
Yes.
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 And then people have a whole new room sometimes that they can use. Do their habits change? I'm not talking about downsizing.
Right.
But if a person calls you because he or she is so overwhelmed with stuff, you know, restaurant clippings, the places they'd like to go and the restaurants have long since closed, or it doesn't even matter what it is, articles from magazines, and you help them clear things out so they can breathe easy, do they change their habits or do they just start... Again.
Well, no, actually, of course, it varies with my clients, but for the most part, I would say because I come in with an overall plan for mm-hmm. them and I come in with a lot of hints of how to do things and in the future, like the bags, you know, have
right.
one container and then, you know, toss. Well, when I come in with those kind of things, it seems like that helps them set a new pattern.
Oh, and also, come to think of it, you're dealing with people who want to. Oh,
it's true.
They wouldn't have called you.
That's right.
Yes.
That's
okay.
right. See, I'm being called. But I do have people that call me back.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of repeat customers because the spouse got in and messed it up,
uh-huh.
the organizing. Or, you know, they've got another room they want organized or a storage space.
But you're touching
like
on
that.
Another really interesting point, though, is that having somebody come in, having you come in as an organizer, doesn't have to be a one-shot deal. And people shouldn't feel it has to be. It can be a service that you allow yourself.
Exactly.
Because you're not going to be the kind of person that keeps, you know, three skirts and two shirts.
Right. Right, exactly. And I think they really enjoy that I'm non-judgmental. Mm-hmm. I don't come in with a forceful kind of attitude. You know, right. I really want them to feel good about it. And they just feel so... And then, too, I have, as I mentioned, the specific goals. So, like, yes. I'll keep them in one focused area or whatever. That's what people tend to do. They want to sort of flirt around from mm-hmm. room to room and stuff. And if I can keep them in mm-hmm. one area, the office or the living room or whatever it is, then they step back and I have a really strong thing about completing the project or a phase
before
I go. Oh, good
point. So they can feel successful.
Oh, yes. That's uh-huh. a huge part of them. I want them to feel successful. I want them to feel that sigh of relief.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So one room at a time. That's a good idea.
Yes.
Because if
yes.
you just do 10% of every room, you don't see a difference.
No.
Okay.
Exactly.
Do you write love letters in your own life?
I do.
What do you have yes. collections of them yourself?
I do.
What do you have
in your
own?
Well, I would call them letters of appreciation.
Oh, I call those love letters. That's
yes.
all. Yes.
Yes. So I have a journal and I go on a rampage of appreciation and I go and I just not in a specific order, but the things that I appreciate that day or the things that I appreciate in my life. And those are like love letters to the universe out there and love letters to myself of
yes.
appreciating.
Well, I think that's wonderful. Love letters to oneself.
Yes.
And I have a thought about that because I talk to a lot of people who do that and they keep journals. And there is something about getting a letter in the mail on that stack of yuck that is now our daily mail. I shouldn't say that because some things are good. But as a rule, if you get a beautiful turquoise envelope with handwriting on it, it's just heartlifting. So if you were to take some of those thoughts and every once in a while, there was something on Facebook recently and it was a jar. Actually, J.R. Nerd posted it. And the suggestion was that whenever something good happens, you take it and you put it in that jar. And at the end of the year, you can look at it and see what kind of a wonderful, blessed year you've had.
Oh, I love that idea.
So I do too. And I wanted to take it a step further and encourage people to not just put it in a jar, write it down, stamp it, and mail it to yourself.
You're so right. I mean, and you're absolutely so right. I have a dear friend who has beautiful calligraphy and was writing a thank you note to me. And when just the envelope itself mm-hmm. just gave me a lovely
Doesn't
day.
It? Yes. Yes. There's the sight of that. And I have noticed that people talk a lot about the lost art of letter writing. And it finally just, I've had it up to here with that. It's not a lost art.
No,
it's just in the hands of fewer people.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's
so
right. They care more about it.
And so when they do it, it really is an art.
That's right.
You know, let the email be for the rest of the stuff. But so you have letters that you keep. What are you going to keep forever in your own life that you would not get rid of?
Probably some of my love notes from my daughter when she was mm-hmm. growing up. Oh, Mama, you're the most wonderful mother in the world. And in her little handwriting, you know.
Yes.
I mean, those are some of the most precious. And I must say that I in moving, it was the most fun going through items was that I would find those little notes
yes.
from her. So
because life
just,
gets busy and you don't
yes.
have to, why would you do that every day?
Right.
But then when you find it, and you can't reread a phone call.
No. It's a treasure. It's just such a treasure. And it takes me right back to that time when...
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Okay. I love to hear that.
Yes.
Because I think it's absolutely true. That,
yes.
And it's also such a legacy that you leave your children when you write them love notes or you keep love letters that, between you and a sweetheart.
Right.
And let them find it once you're gone and see what a wonderful pedigree they have. That they came from people who knew how to love.
Well, you know, and I
documented it.
I would make a suggestion here too.
Well,
I have a very sweet boyfriend and I switched phones and I realized that I was going to lose all the text that he had sent me. So and also sweet text from my daughter. So I sat down and transcribed every single one of them
good.
On my computer before I turned
yes.
that phone in.
Because it's also a good idea to, I mean, first choice is really to send a love letter. And that can be a one sentence. I remember the day you showed up at my front door wearing that green dress and you looked so gorgeous. I could hear something. Doesn't even matter. You're just grinning at the thought of it, aren't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. I would love a letter like that.
But if you do get emails, that it's worth printing them out on good paper.
That's a good point.
And putting them in the... Those shouldn't be lost either.
No, no, no. And have them in a special box. They're special. Just like your jewelry box.
Stationery stores and bookstores sell beautiful treasure boxes.
Right. It's a treasure.
Okay. Thank you so much for doing this with me.
Yes.
I love talking about just what to keep and what not to keep, and that love letters always get in the keep.
Oh, yes. Love letters always in the keep.
Yes. And people find them generations later.
Yes.
So I just want to remind people that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter is a special occasion. And even Dawn Middleman will say, keep those.
Yes.
Wherever
please.
You go, take them with you.
Keep those.
Thank you, dear. Well, until next time, this is Janet Gallen saying goodbye, and we'll talk to you later.